This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Okay, so I'm at the Manchester Museum of Science and Industry today, where they are having a light, fantastic day. I'm here with Giles Johnson, who is a biologist at the University of Manchester. Hi, Giles.
Hello.
So Giles has been presenting a stand which talks about different kinds of light and how they impact on plant growth. So if you could tell us a little bit about that and how you found today.
Okay, so the starting point for our stand is the idea that plants need light to grow. So everybody knows that plants are green. And we are starting by talking to small children about what colours of plants, what colours of light do plants like. And if you ask children what colours of light does a plant need to grow, they will automatically think green is the answer. And what we're showing them is actually that's wrong, it's the wrong way around, that what plants are doing is taking out other colours of light, particularly red and blue light, and green is the bit they can't use, which is why that's what we see. So we're doing a mixed stand where we're showing different colours of plant, different types of foliage, and talking about how those plants are able to capture light and the different ways in which they use light.
So do you think that is mostly driven by the chemistry of what plants are able to do? Or is it just a function of what light we get from the sun and is transmitted from the atmosphere? Or is it maybe an interplay between both?
It's an interplay between both. So there would be no point in plants evolving to use electromagnetic radiation that wasn't making its way down to the surface of the earth. At the same time, the energy they're absorbing has to be sufficiently high energy that can actually drive the chemical reactions that we want to drive. So photosynthesis is about... The primary reactions of photosynthesis involve taking water and splitting it to release oxygen and then remove electrons, which are used to reduce carbon to make sugars. And that's a high energy, that's a very high energy requiring chemistry, very difficult chemistry to do. So you can't just take any old light and do that. But at the same time, it's the spectrum which makes it through the atmosphere and down to the Earth's surface, which is the most important for plant growth.
So what would you say are the key windows in the Earth atmosphere which are most important for plant growth and would necessarily be a requirement for plant growth, say, on other planets?
Well, the plants which have evolved on this planet are primarily absorbing light in the range from about 400 up to about 680, well, up to 700 nanometers. So that's also coinciding with what we're using for our vision, because that's the big window in the atmosphere. Obviously, I'm not an atmospheric physicist. I don't know about these things. There are a few algae which actually use, or photosynthetic bacteria, which actually use different wavelengths. They use longer wavelengths. So they're exploiting gaps which have been missed by the plant. So we can get certain bacteria which will absorb light up to about 800 nanometers into the far red.
And presumably the morphology of the plants impacts on this as well. So is there usually... Are there reasonable correlations between the kind of morphology that you get in plants and the kinds of photosynthesis that they do, between the morphologies that you get in the plants and the kinds of light that they use as well? Do those two things usually relate?
Well, you get different morphologies depending on the amount of light the plants get. So if we think about a tree, has a canopy of leaves which are arranged to optimize the light capture. So they're trying to grow so the leaves are not overlapping too much. So that there's a sort of even distribution of light through the canopy, so that all the leaves get enough light that it's worth them growing. At the same time, if you look underneath the canopy, if you look, on a forest floor, you don't get so much vegetation, but you still get plants growing. And they have adapted their photosynthesis to suit those particular conditions. So they change, for example, there are two types of chlorophyll, which you find in higher plants, chlorophyll A and chlorophyll B. If you look at trees, they will tend to have a lot of chlorophyll A, relatively little chlorophyll B. Plants growing on the forest floor will tend to have more chlorophyll B because that takes slightly different wavelengths of light. So it actually takes, on the blue side of the spectrum, it takes more into the green, and on the red side of the spectrum, it takes more into the orange. So they're optimizing their spectrum, their activation spectrum, their action spectrum for light to suit the environment they're growing in. They can only do that up to a certain extent, though. So they'll also have morphological differences. So, for example, a plant growing in low light will have thin leaves because there's no point in making a fat leaf because light is not going to penetrate through the layers of cells.
So I will ask, what has been your favourite question which you've been asked by a member of public today, either which you could answer or which you couldn't answer?
I have to think about that one. I've been flummoxed by something. I'm trying to remember what it was now, but something completely flummoxed me. Um, think I'm going to have to pass on that one because my mind is a blank at the moment.
So, other than that question, the question of what question is it?
There was a gentleman who came and asked me at some length about topics like terraforming Mars, for example. So, what would be the requirements to get plants to grow on another planet, and what would be the challenges? He was thinking about it more from the perspective of disease. So, if we take species from Earth and take them onto a different, either take them into space to grow on a space station or take them to a different planet, we would almost certainly be carrying pathogens with us. We would be taking a very narrow range of species and a very narrow genetic diversity. So there would be a significant danger that we could be producing populations which wouldn't be very robust when it came to coping with diseases. That was something which was completely left field. I wasn't expecting to talk about that, but it was really interesting to talk to members of the public and explore these kind of issues, which I wouldn't necessarily think about from my own research.
So I find that the members of the public are very good at pushing the boundaries of the particular very small sphere of stuff that I know about in my research, so that's very good.
Yeah.
So it's nearly the end of the day now, so I'll let you get back to tidying up and going home. So thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. It's nice talking to you.
Okay, thank you.